We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Get your picks in. Justin's going to go off the regular pathway. I'm just going to tease it. Not going to tell you what sport, but he's not betting from NBA or NHL because it's been a tough week for him.
It's been a tough week. I believe I'm 2 for 4. I've blown up the last two, though.
But you've blown up the
winners, too.
That's tough for you.
But, like, we don't talk about, you know, Monday when...
I understand.
We're also
I'm just saying you're going to do something different,
Tuesday,
and we're looking forward to that.
I think we're 2 for 3.
It's like when
too.
You were on your World Cup, you were just fired up to bet World Cup, and everyone was like, Justin, stop it.
Yeah, it was not good for a while. But I'm going outside my comfort zone again. Actually, it might be in my comfort zone.
I'm hoping that you have thumbed through the book that I got you for Christmas.
I think I have a really good line. We'll see.
Well, that's an option later, but send that in, 590-590. We're waiting to get Charles. You wanted to talk about something that we briefly mentioned throughout the first block. The guys on the dad's trip disappointed in front of their dads.
I want to know your
right
situation because you were elite level. You were doing things Connor Bedard was doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, like stat lines that only us mortals, myself,
okay.
could dream of.
Yeah, I scored 9 goals in one game.
So was it ever uncomfortable for you on the way home with dad?
So both parents had a different vibe.
Did you ever get read the riot act? Okay, what are the vibes?
Dad was more of the silence.
Okay.
More of the...
When things didn't go well.
Disappointed.
How did you disappoint?
Probably just not getting in the play, not making, you know, impactful
Scotty Barnes shifts, invisibility sometimes.
A little bit.
Dipping in and out of
but
relevance.
But my parents, the problem, and I'll say this, my mom's not listening. She often compared me to other players. Like, if a girl on my team scored 2 goals, it was like, why didn't you get 2 goals? And I'm like, sometimes...
It's a high variance game, mom.
Yeah, sometimes you are impacting the play in a different way.
Okay.
But it was a lot of comparison because at this point, you're in high school. Like, the scouts are... They're not coming to every game, right? They're looking at stat lines. We're up in Seneca College for the Toronto Arrows. Not every game was Dartmouth, Princeton, Minnesota at every game. They see you at a tournament. So what are you doing statistically? That was important for getting scouted.
Did they try to humble you? Like when the game was a little bit too easy? Because at some point you were probably...
No.
Dominant.
Like I played boys AAA growing up and I was not a dominant player out on the ice.
Okay, at what level were you?
I played D until I moved to girls hockey.
Oh, and your mom wanted you to score 2 twice
per game? Different. I'm talking about like high school.
Okay, you must have dominated high school.
I played, yeah, I was pretty good.
So how did they try to humble you in those moments when you had like 4?
My dad was the more quiet, reserved, like, all right, just like thought you could have done better, like just a bit disappointed, like these are your opportunities and you're squandering them. And my mom was a bit more fiery.
Mm.
There was some drive homes that I remember being emotionally impacted. But nonetheless, they pushed me to the level
you'd never be where you are
of
today
hockey without them. And I think they had a good balance.
I love it.
Love them and appreciate them. And I couldn't have done it without them. All right. Our Insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's our best friend, Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst this morning. How's it going, Charles?
It's going great. Going great. I hope you guys are doing well. Justin, does it ever happen to you? Were you emotionally impacted after game?
Oh, I'm still reeling, Charles.
Okay.
No, we were talking. The Leafs had their dad's trip, so the dads were watching the Leafs put together one of their worst performances of the year. And we were talking about what the situation would be on the car ride home for Ailish. There was, you know, a different story between mom and dad. If I did something stupid on the ice, I would hear about it. It wouldn't be silent, that's for sure. So if you had a bad game, what was the sort of parenting style you were dealing with?
Well, I played high school basketball for my dad.
Oh.
Ooh, that's a tough situation. That's tricky.
The best way I can describe it is, you know, he was tough on me.
Mm.
Not cruel, not any of those things, but he was tough. Like anything went wrong, it was on me. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, I think the three of us were good players in whatever we did.
Yeah.
So we had an impact on our teams. I'm trying to, you know, none of us want to be arrogant about it, but let's be honest, you know, we were good enough that I mean, it's probably safe to say we were the best on our teams. So my dad would be, you know, he'd be jumping on me. And one day I just came home, I just had enough. And I was very, very upset about the whole thing. And, you know, that's when I kind of enlisted my mother. I just came in the door and she said, "You doing okay?" And I just kind of gave her a look and ran to my room. And as soon as my father came through the house, she jumped all over him. Like, "Why is he?" And so, you know, he caught you know what. Mm-hmm. And he comes to my room. He goes, "What the heck was that? What'd you bring your mother into it?" And I was just like, "Why are you on me all the time? My God. I mean, you know, without me, like, we can't do this, we can't do that." I kind of took that tack. And he let me finish. And then he just kind of stopped and he said, "I thought you were smarter."
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Ooh. And I said, "Excuse me?" He goes, "You're the best player. I'm the coach. I'm your dad. You think everyone's not looking at us all the time to see if there's favoritism, if you're getting the best of everything, if I'm soft on you." He said, "I have to coach them through you. So that everything I do isn't them saying, 'Oh, he's just letting Charles go. He's doing this. He's just yelling at me.' So I coach them by jumping on you for their errors." He said, "And I really just thought you were smart enough to understand that." Mm. And turned and walked out. Wow.
Wow.
think I didn't carry that one with me.
Yeah, I can feel it.
Well, like, I don't know if you heard us coming in, but like Ailish was saying, I mean, that probably helped shape Charles Davis,
sure,
the athlete. That conversation right there probably had a pretty sizable impact.
Absolutely. You know, that sort of thing. You know, we could all go on and on about the different things and the different times, but sounds to me like we were all very fortunate to have the people we've had. And, you know, look, none of us like being criticized, but there are times and places and how they did it. And, you know, obviously we take things away with us that have helped us be where we are today and consider ourselves fortunate. I mean, for me, I just felt bad for the poor officials, because the basketball officials would walk in the gym and you'd hear my mother above everyone, "Oh, no, not you two. Oh, no." And they'd be like, "Hi, Mrs. Davis." And my dad would have his head in his hands like, "Guess we're not getting any calls today. Way to go, Mom. Nice job. Way to rip them." So we all had it.
We all did have it. We all don't have an assignment this weekend. We're a little disappointed we're not going to hear you this weekend.
I'm not even going to watch.
But, Charles, it leads us.
You have to watch. I missed the playoffs.
Different. Well,
and that's what we want to know.
I don't have an assignment, but I'm watching.
I'm
watching everything. I mean, me and the couch, I'm going to have to get a new couch because no one else will be able to sit in this couch because it will be molded to the exact shape of my body by the end of Monday night.
Well, that's what we were debating. Like, how does Charles Davis watch when he's not on assignment? He just went through 18 weeks. You mentioned, I think you're doing preseason games all the way through. It's not like an office setup where you're taking notes and you're just in work mode. You can actually finally enjoy an NFL Sunday in a reclined, horizontal manner.
I am, absolutely. Now, I am fortunate enough that I work the Super Bowl for the international broadcast.
Oh, hell
NFL
yeah.
Does international broadcast, and it goes to, I mean, they put out a statement, they talk about like 180 countries, and I'm like, seriously?
Wow.
You know, I never thought that was true, but I think it was last year I was working with Kevin Burkhart, and Kevin, in the middle of the game, we were on a break, and he says, "Hey, dude, check this out." One of his friends was in Thailand and had done a video of the game on, and you could hear our voices. And he was in Thailand. I was like, "Oh my God, that is so cool." So I thought that was great. So working the game, Ian Eagle is doing the game with me this year, because Kevin now, of course, is doing it for doing the actual Super Bowl. He has the game this year, so he can't do it with me. So Ian and I are doing that game. So I will watch every game, because part of it is research about who the final two are standing. And the preparation for that game is not the same as if I'm doing it as a regular. I'll be prepared, I'll do everything, but it's not quite the same because you're doing an international broadcast, so some of it is almost a primer, right? Some of it is almost, "And that's why they got a first down, 10 yards, you get it," you know, that sort of a things. So you have to do a little bit of that in a ball game, so it's a little different.
Okay, a couple weeks to prepare for that. When you are circling your leisure time this weekend and you're looking at which game might get you most excited, which way are you leaning in that regard?
I'm fired up about Minnesota and the Giants because that is the trendy pick, I think, by a lot of people, that the Giants will go into Minnesota and win this game. And I'm excited to watch that one because Minnesota has a chip on its shoulder for all year long, being the team that everyone has said, I don't know how they've won as many games as they've had, as they have. I mean, that is the team. We went there for the Jets at Minnesota, and that's all I heard. Head coach, players, everyone brought it up without us even bringing it up. And that was then. They've won, what, 11 one-score games, 12 one-score games? It is the craziest thing. And by the way, in point differential, they are minus on the year. So they've either won close games or they've gotten jumped on. And the weird part is the Giants are coming into town. They got to the playoffs on a roster that never should have got to the playoffs. They only won one divisional game. They won one game in the NFC East. And they are minus in point differential. This is a weird setup, a weird matchup, but one that's really good because they had a heck of a game in the regular season. Giants lose it by three. Minnesota kicks Greg Joseph kicks a 61-yard field goal at the buzzer. I'm excited to watch that one. Yeah, there's some other ones that have sexier names and different things like that. But, like, boxing styles make the fight. And I think these two teams' styles make a pretty good fight.
I wonder about how much of an emotional impact Brian Daboll gives that team. You know, like, he can inspire a squad, especially if they're underdogs. They're this team of destiny. You go in there, no one believes in you. Like, I think they're the trendy upset pick in terms of what we're looking at the betting lines as well, and we talked about this. But he seems like a coach that can really, like, almost is a hard to evaluate an intangible aspect of this game. But I think it should make a significant difference in the confidence level that the Giants come in with.
I think you're right about that, Ailish. And I think that when you look at the construction of this Giants roster, and as I've said, to me, this is a roster that is not a playoff-caliber roster, all right? But he brought guys with him from Buffalo that knew him and could spread his word for him as well. And he brought guys who make a difference. John Feliciano, their center, is a starter for them. They picked up Isaiah Hodgins, the wide receiver, like midseason, and he's had an impact for them. Because he understood what Daboll wanted. Daboll understood what he had. And they used him to good advantage because in Buffalo, how is he going to get on the field? He's not beating out Diggs and Gabe Davis and those guys. So here in the Giants, he has a chance because the receiving core wasn't very deep. You know, so he found those type of players. And as you mentioned, the way he impacts, well, he impacts because he gets close enough to him that they can feel him and know that he's real. He's the type of guy that in college football, I'm pretty sure it was almost a revolving door at his house that guys could come and hang out. You know, he's the guy who likes to have the cookout and have everyone around. And then when he jumps on them during the week, no one likes to jump on him, but they know he's jumping on him because he's coaching them, but they also already know that he cares about them. And that's a big deal for Brian Daboll. So I think that you were spot on in your assessment and analysis of what kind of impact he has with that roster. I agree with you on that, Ailish.
So we ranked our games of intrigue, and both Justin and I had Jacksonville and the Chargers as our top level of interest, just with Herbert and Lawrence and the battle of them. I think it's an interesting game because it feels like one with impending chaos. Two quarterbacks that have a lot at hand, a lot of lack of experience as well. Is there a way that, you know, Justin Herbert with 1 year more of experience really has the upper hand, or do you view this quarterback matchup of, you know, and it could go either way, a coin toss, and the best team that night or that day will win?
I think that Herbert does have an advantage that way. He's played in bigger games throughout his first 2 years. He played in games last year that impacted whether they got into the playoffs or not, and came out on the negative side. Remember the Raiders game at the end of the season? They blew that Texans game the week before in Houston, a game they should have won, where Houston was playing guys that, you know, they darn near called the three of us and said, "You guys want to try out and play this week?" That's how close it was. So he's been around that. He also has played through some injuries. Remember the Chiefs game earlier this year? It turned out with ribs, and he kept playing. This guy is mentally and physically tough, so I think he has a little extra experience that way. The first year for Lawrence was a lost year because of Meyer and that staff and just a horrific job in coaching that young man. But this year, nursed back to health, and mentally especially, Doug Peterson, and kept getting better. And by the end of the year, he was so good by the end of the year that he was 20 for 32 in their last ball game against Tennessee. And all you hear is how he wasn't sharp in that game. And the truth was, that is accurate. He missed about three throws that he normally doesn't miss. If he hits those three throws, I think Jacksonville wins going away. So I expect him to play much better in this one and be sharper. But it's a great matchup. Two young quarterbacks, both going to be the face of their franchise for a long time. Huge game. I do think the Chargers are going to go across country and win this one, though. I really do. I think the Chargers' defense, last five, six games of the year, has really become a good defense and impacted things. Earlier in the year, running the ball against them was no problem at all, and their final numbers are still abysmal. But go check the last four or five games. They played much better against the run, and if they do that again and slow down ETN, I like the Chargers in this one.
That game has a lot of intrigue. One that has questions for sure, and certainly some intrigue as well, is Dallas and Tampa Bay on Monday night. I just can't shake this feeling that Tom Brady has everybody right where he wants them, despite a brutal season and despite not even stringing together a couple decent games in a row. Like, yeah, he looked pretty good before he exited against Atlanta, and of course he had that good performance the week before that. But it just feels like Tom Brady might be saving a moment for us, and it could be Monday night versus the Cowboys. Like, do you have a firm read on either of these teams, where they're at? Dallas looked like they were being written off right away after that season opening loss to Tampa Bay, and then they found themselves, they look like a juggernaut, and now they've been fading, and Tampa's just been treading water all season, but now seems like they might be dangerous in this moment. What's your read on Tampa Bay and Dallas on Monday night?
Justin, I can't get a read. And I fall back on my experience with coaches and players in this league who often tell us, be careful about the momentum thing. Because we've seen where we thought a team had momentum and they got jumped on. We've seen where teams look like they were totally on the deck and they come off of it and play well. I always fall back on the year Indianapolis won it with Peyton Manning as their quarterback. They went to Jacksonville, I think like 2 weeks before the end of the season. And I think Jacksonville ran for like 377 yards. Fred Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew just destroyed them. And you're thinking, I don't know how Indianapolis survives. And I remember right in the playoffs, they were the pick to get beat early. But Bob Sanders, their safety, had missed a lot of the regular season, and he came back for the playoffs, bullet Bob, and shored up their run defense. And they found their way through, won a Super Bowl, beat Chicago, the whole thing. So that's just one example. Talk about it with Brian Daboll, Ailish, just the other day. You know, we had him in the last game of the year, and he said, you take momentum and kick it out the window. He said, I've been around so many places, and he has. He's been in Cleveland, Miami, New England, obviously University of Alabama. He said, He said, it's how you play that day. So don't worry about that part. So, Justin, I don't have a read, but I'm going to go with what I'm feeling. What you described with Brady, I think, feels real to me. The big one, and I need your help. Do you guys know Vita Vea, the big defensive tackle with Tampa, is he playing in this ballgame?
Oh, that's the putting us on the spot. I haven't heard his name much, so I just assume that he is.
Because he had been hurt. If Vita Vea is playing, okay, and he's playing and he's at full capacity, I like Tampa. I think he'll shore up their run defense enough to help them against Dallas's run game. And if they can get them in a second and long, third and long, and let Todd Bowles unleash his exotic blitzes, I like Tampa at home. Plus, we know Tampa went 8-9, right? We understand that. Go back and check over the years the teams that have won divisions or gotten the playoffs with a 500 or below record. I think everyone would be surprised how many times that team has won the first game of the playoffs. The beast mode run, Seattle, New Orleans. New Orleans was the defending Super Bowl champs. Seattle got in at 7-9. They won that game in Seattle. I remember Ron Rivera's Carolina team, I think, was 7-8-1, beating Arizona at home in the first round of the playoffs, winning their division that year. I could go on, and it's not 100%, but they've won more than people think, and none of them had Tom Brady. I like Tampa at home in this one.
And Vea was limited in practice this week, but at least, you know, he saw some of the field. So we shall see on that front.
We shall see.
All right, Charles. The other three games we haven't mentioned, two of them have a quarterback that is really not impactful. It's looks like Buffalo and Baltimore will probably be able to, you know, easily walk through these games. But Seattle and San Francisco is the battle of the heartwarming quarterback stories this season. I think that Brock Purdy obviously has this massive opportunity to show that he can be a future quarterback in this league. Do you think that he's got the guts and the opportunity in his hand that he's going to capitalize on this this Niners team and keep riding the momentum past this first matchup?
I do, Ailish. I think he's got the goods. And he's going to be one of those great stories, Mr. Irrelevant, makes good, blah, 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 blah. Most of the time, if a team has a rookie quarterback, I don't know how any of us ever picked them to win a Super Bowl. It's like it feels like it's too much. The way that they play offense in San Francisco, the way that other quarterbacks had success in that offense under Kyle Shanahan, and even other places, guys that you've never really heard about much, you look back and go, wow, under Shanahan, he played pretty well. I just think Purdy can pull this off. They can win a Super Bowl with Brock Purdy, in my mind. I think that, and Geno Smith had a heck of a year, but I feel like Seattle's leaking oil down the stretch. Like, they've given all they can to get here, and San Francisco continues to get stronger. I think San Francisco wins this one comfortably. I'm with you also on Buffalo over Miami. I just don't see how Miami can overcome the quarterback situation and other things they've got going on there. And the Baltimore Cincinnati game has intrigue. I think Tyler Huntley will make it back and play instead of Anthony Brown. They will have to run the heck out of the football. The Bengals' right side offensive line is beat up. Probably two different starters there. But I just feel like Cincinnati is still having helped handle the DeMar Hamlin situation as well as anyone could in the position they were in. They are pretty ticked off about all of a sudden the NFL changing the rules. And going, well, we're going to do this, and now we're going to – and they lost their opportunity to be the number one seed. Because you remember, if that game's played and they somehow beat Buffalo, they still are in it to be the number one seed and host all the way through. And once that game was a no contest and the league changed the rules, they lost that opportunity. And believe me, they're carrying that around with them. I think that they beat Baltimore, too.
Yeah, it looks like Cincy and Buffalo continuing through. But quickly, before I let you go, I want to ask about that change of rules, Atlanta possibly being the neutral site. If Bills, Chiefs in the AFC, it's going to be indoors and it's going to be on turf, which is different than the outdoor field that they would have been matched up at. I know there was no ideal situation or like outcome from this. This is a decision that is pending, but how do you think that would impact these teams? And does anybody have a little bit of an upper hand in that situation?
I don't know that anyone does. I think that the game is still played exactly the same way. You know, Kansas City plays outdoors. Buffalo plays outdoors. Both are used to elements. I mean, no one deals with elements more than Buffalo. But Kansas City can get nasty and cold.
Yeah.
So it's not like they've ever played where it hasn't been that way. So I'm not sure much changes other than venue. And it will feel a little weird, those two playing in January in sterile atmosphere. But other than that, not a heck of a lot. I just, you know, I said it from day one, and I stand by it. The league had procedures already on the books to address a no-contest game, believe it or not. It all started with COVID, and it was right there. And they decided to throw it out. And I think I understood why. The optics of what happened, DeMar Hamlin in Buffalo, the idea that Buffalo might not have an opportunity to be number one, you know, and with all that happening in front of the whole world, I think the league just looked at it and owners and people thought that just doesn't feel right. Unfortunately, the outcome is if you reward one, you're probably punishing another. And Cincinnati turned out to be that franchise. But I always thought you had stuff on the books for these reasons to take emotion out of it. And the league kicked that to the side. So I just never understood that part. We're all for Buffalo. Believe me, we all walk around with number threes up. Mm-hmm. Trust me. The whole world's doing that. But that's why you have procedures on the books to take emotion out. And the league went against that. And that was a surprise to me.
Well, a couple weeks down the road, we will recycle this conversation, I'm sure, looking like that could be the pathway for these teams. Charles, appreciate you joining us this morning. Enjoy your viewing experience. Get that couch imprint going, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
I look forward to it. One last thing, guys. Mm-hmm. If they do end up playing a neutral site game, it might open the door to league taking all the championship games, AFC, NFC, down the road.
Wow.
Two neutral sites.
Don't tell me that.
Keep an eye on it. And no, the irony is, you know who suggested it and wanted it the most? Lamar Hunt, when he was still alive, the owner of Kansas City. He proposed it years and years ago. Push for it. Never got it. And here we are. His team may be involved in the first one. And if that happens and it's successful, it might happen down the road. Don't be surprised. Oof. You guys take care.
Yikes. All right, Charles. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much.
Be good. Bye-bye.
Sorry, buddy. Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst. And Air Insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I would very much dislike that if that's the pathway they go.
No, they're turning into a bowl season. Like, it's brutal.
What is this,
there's no character.
College football.
There's no
playoffs?
Advantage. It's brutal. NFL season, you earn something. I know this mm-hmm. year it's been, you know, kind of like questioned. You know, which team really earned it? Kansas City really earned it. That's why they're not getting it. Like, I get that all, but like, there should be something to play for in the regular season. That number one seed should mean something, and I hope it still does. I will say, nice of Charles to include me in the elite athlete conversation.
Yeah, I caught that. Big boost for you on Friday.
I mean, I tried to push back, but there was only so much I could do.
All right, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Quickly on this one. We talked about it with Frank this week. We've talked about it with Jeff. We talked about it with Elliot. What's going on with Patrick Kane and the Blackhawks' future? Well, there were some conversations around this yesterday from the Blackhawks Talk podcast. We got the clip to play.
I think we kind of, I don't want to say we knew we were going to be in this position. I think there's a little hope at the beginning of the year of the start we got off to. There's still a lot of season left. You know, I think we could be a team that, you know, you saw the last two games, you know, kind of find ways to win, compete every night. But, it's a different year, obviously, you know, going into the last year contract and different variables about what's going to, you know, happen or where you're going to be the rest of your career, different things like that. So, you know, you think about that stuff, especially as it gets into to January here and got a couple months to the trade deadline. So we'll see how it all shakes out. Very fortunate and blessed to play with one team for 15, 16 years, whatever it's been, and not many guys do that. So I know that it's a different situation here in Chicago, and they kind of want to build up their prospect pool. And you know, they've used that term rebuild, and we'll kind of see where we fit into that, or if not. So I'm sure with that, that's what those discussions are all about.
Eyeball emojis.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
he didn't
boy.
Seem
happy.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard this from people, but like, he doesn't seem like someone who really wants to tour NHL cities, putting on different sweaters, chasing Stanley Cups. I think he'd be pretty cool just being a Blackhawk, but are the Blackhawks cool with keeping around the legacy members of the franchise?
We'll see.
I don't know. Doesn't
he was
seem
placed
like
on IR Thursday with a lower body injury, so we'll see where this shakes out. We're going to talk to Michael Grange on the other side of the break, sports NBA columnist and insider. Raptors put together their first three-game win streak of the season. What does this mean for the future? Is this a mini surge, or is it just a blip before the trade deadline hits?
Is it just Charlotte?
That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Elish.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey,
great back cut. Gary Trent Jr. flying in. It's all working early. Pascal steps into the bridge. Got it. Siakam, 3-3. Scotty, push shot. Doesn't go. His own rebound. Goes back up with an empty slam. OG kicks it.
Listen, we're trying to make some progress here. I think we are. I think that you know, there's a good sign with some shots going in. There's some good sign with a high number of assists. There's some little bit more life off the bench. You know, there's some good signs there for sure.
Good signs, but what does that mean long term for the Toronto Raptors? Let's talk to Michael Grange, sports and NBA columnist and insider this morning. How's it going, Grange?
It's going well. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're thriving in the highs and the lows of the Toronto Raptors. As you put it, a mini surge, two big wins over the Charlotte Hornets. What does this, what can you glean from a little stretch like this against a team that, you know, isn't the most competitive, but the Raptors seem to be finding a couple things that are working for them?
Yeah, I think the positive would be that, you know, against this level of competition anyway, they have a style. They came out and played an effective brand of basketball that kind of fits the image they have for themselves more or less. And you know, you saw it at times defensively. I think more so encouraging these two games. You've seen it offensively, a lot more ball movement, a lot more sort of distribution of shots, a little more activity from the bench, as Nick Nurse was saying. And so, you know, in a vacuum, it's all good. It's stuff they've been trying to do, wanting to do, and I think the, you know, the difference maker really is they've made some threes at the last two games. I think 30 in the last two games. So that would be the positive, I think. The flip side of that, I think if you go back to the Portland game, I think combined, I think these teams are 4-21 in their last, you know, I think Portland's 2-11 in their last 13 and Charlotte's 2-10 or 2-up, yeah, 2-8 or whatever in the last 10, whatever it is. Anyways, teams that are kind of struggling and, you know, you'd be really concerned if the Raptors weren't able to kind of assert their, you know, put a stamp on games like that.
Yeah, that's all fair. I mean, the opponent, the context of the opponent is certainly meaningful in this situation. I kind of circle back, and I think the most encouraging thing was just their start, the decisiveness that they had, getting to their spots, taking the shot that they planned to take at least early in that game. I do think some of that like faded a little bit over time, and it actually got kind of hairy at the end, only up five, I think, and LaMelo missed an easy layup to cut it even further. Was there enough in that? Okay, we saw the intent and the start against a weak opponent, but do we see adjustments too? Do we see in-game stuff landing a counterpunch from a counterpunch? Was there enough in the natural flow of the game that was worth taking note of as well?
Well, I think the other thing I take note of is that you know, this team still struggles defensively. You know, Charlotte came in rock bottom in the NBA in offense. Or in defense, sorry, in offense. And, you know, they shot, I think, 54 and 53%. And last night, I think they shot 40% from three as well. And you're right. I mean, LaMelo, a couple of better decisions by LaMelo Ball down the last 5-6 minutes of the game. And, you know, Charlotte could have won it. You know, he had a couple of swings. There was, you know, there's one play that he kind of tried to take a wild layup against Pascal Siakam, sort of fake a dunk and end up taking an offensive foul. And, you know, that was to get him down, get him within five. And then, as you point out, he had an open three to get it to two. And then that same possession, he missed a layup that would have got him to three. And each time the Raptors were able to go back and score, and credit to them. But, you know, they turned him over, 22, 23 times. And, you know, they needed pretty much every one of those turnovers. Yeah. So I think, you know, I guess my kind of takeaway here is look, you feel good for them. And I think you can only play who's on the schedule. But, you know, I just, what sample size are you going to get? Are you going to kind of buy into the fact that the first 39 games, you know, they look how they looked, and then, you know, you got a reeling Portland team and Charlotte that's kind of been kind of stumbling around all year. And, you know, that's a nice base that you maybe build off, and we'll see what happens. You know, the schedule gets a lot more road heavy here after Saturday night, but, you know, I'd be pretty concerned the fact that you weren't able to hold Charlotte under 50% for two consecutive games.
To quote you again, you said it was a great effort from Scotty in the game. And effort's an interesting word because sometimes it can be, you know, followed with a negative connotation, like, oh, he wasn't giving effort before and the effort's the issue. And I don't think that's what you're trying to say. But it was a more impactful effort or performance from Scotty Barnes. And I wonder what you think sets the table for that. Like, okay, it might be an easier matchup for him against Charlotte, but sometimes, and I think my biggest thing with Scotty Barnes this year, just fading in and out of relevancy, where he's just kind of floating through the game sometimes, and sometimes when he's impactful, filling up the stat sheet, flirting with a triple-double, it's like, why can't we see this all the time? So what do you think sets the table for Scotty? What do you think leads to him having, as you put it, a great effort?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I'm sure, you know, Nick Nurse would wish he knew. You know, I thought, I think Scotty likes winning. And, you know, I think he's, you know, there's one thing about this last week or so is it kind of, you can kind of feel a cloud lifting a little bit. And, you know, last night after the game he was just kind of emotive and then kind of happy and relaxed. And, you know, as we've kind of seen him all year. And so you just kind of wonder how much he's been in his own mind, you know, through some of these first half struggles. It was interesting the role he's playing, where he really is basically Draymond Green for them, you know, kind of a point center right now. And he's definitely adapting to that a lot better and, you know, really seeming to toggle back and forth between kind of attacking when they do give him a bit of space and putting some pressure on the defense that way, or just kind of quickly getting into kind of screening actions and kind of making plays for his teammates in, you know, out of that. And, you know, but last night was interesting. You know, he was talking about they were kind of playing up on the screen. So he would, you know, set a ball screen for Fred and Plumlee would kind of play more to the level of the screen, and then that would give him more opportunity to the roll. He got those two quick early dunks, and, you know, that I'm sure got him going. But if there was one single thing that would kind of explain why he can, as you point out, kind of disappear, and we saw it, you know, not too last week, he would disappear for multiple quarters at a time versus last night, where, you know, he was arguably, you know, one or 1A best player on the floor from, you know, from the minute the ball went up till the very end. You know, I think our people would be feeling a lot different about Scotty. And in fairness, you know, he's a guy, I think, you know, in the second half could really, you know, you could really see something happening here for him. And then I think this little stretch here could be something that he could really build on. And, he's had a lot of moments in the last couple of weeks where he's had an amazing half, an amazing quarter, you know, but trying to turn those into amazing games is kind of a big next step.
Certainly another major conversation point has been Fred VanVleet. Last night, only 8 shot attempts, a quiet night, maybe a little quiet stretch at times, but is this the game script, or is this a conscious change in how we're deploying Fred to see him only take, you know, less shots and be less impactful offensively? Is that something Nick Nurse is doing, or is that just the way that the game has gone?
I think it's probably a combination. And, you know, there's a little bit more of, you know, Fred setting up in the corner, you know, and then coming and getting the ball a little later in the possession off a dribble handoff and things like that. You know, I think he's looking to drive and create a little bit more. But a lot of these things are so kind of integrated, right? Is you know, the games where people maybe look at Fred and think he's forcing it a little bit, or, you know, that's because usually because they need it. You know, it's not, you know, I'm not of the school where, you know, Fred's the guy who forces his offense. I think he's really is mostly trying to impose, make something happen. And, you know, this team has been, they've had so many games, so many stretches where there just hasn't been enough going on that he's kind of had to kind of take the game by the collar at times, and maybe to his detriment. So I think when you've got what's going on here the last couple of games and the ball's moving the way it is, and you know he can kind of let things unfold. I think it's important that he's willing to do that, and I think he's the kind of player that is willing to do that if it's working, and it certainly has been working the next couple of games. And I think what's key too is, you know, he's also had a great feel for when they've needed to go and get a bucket. And I think the fourth quarter was almost in some ways kind of a masterpiece. You know, you talk about LaMelo Ball and just kind of really fumbling the game away in my mind down the stretch. You know, is there more opposite type player? You know, and I'm a big LaMelo Ball fan. I mean, his talent is just bananas. But, you know, at the other end of that scale is Fred, I would say. And he was the guy I thought who really made sure the game didn't slip away. You know, so I don't think that the Raptors' best basketball is played with Fred VanVleet taking 8 shots a night. But I think the fact he's comfortable doing that in a winning cause is, you know, I think it speaks well of him.
Well, that's Fred on the court, but Fred off the court, I don't think we've talked to you since the contract stuff came out. I believe it was this Monday or Saturday or Sunday, but the potential extension and all that drama, that jazz that we've been talking about. But how do you read the situation and everybody's like comfortability level that he could be or should be a part of the Raptors' future?
I think if he wants to be part of the Raptors' future, I mean, I think he's really got to play well. You know, I think the Raptors value him for all kinds of reasons, you know, but if he believes, and I mean, his quote is saying he believes he's outplayed the extension that in theory is on the table. So all of a sudden you're talking about a $30 million plus player. You know, I think it'd be pretty hard, I think, for the Raptors or maybe any team to, you know, kind of go to that. You know, you're talking $130, $140, $150 million contract. If over this entire season, you know, he struggles the way he has the first half of the season, you know, I think it's the onus is on him to kind of rediscover the offense. Really just the shooting, you know, he kind of got him in the All-Star game last year. And, you know, and then I think it's going to come down to what the market is really out there for Fred, and then, you know, and how comfortable he is, you know, with what the Raptors end up maybe offering him. And, you know, but I think there's a lot of justifiable questions as to, as you point out, you know, is the long-term fit here correct and at what number?
So it wasn't a great night for Gary Trent Jr., at least from a shooting perspective, 6 of 19 from the field, 2 of 11 from 3, 19 points is still reasonably productive. But he's kind of emerged as something of a common denominator of late when things are going well for the Raptors, elevated back into a starting role, and he's led that all-bench lineup really effectively. Are the Raptors, what are we seeing here? Are the Raptors finding a way to showcase him a little bit? Or is he just sort of fitting a little bit better into the system, or nurses finding better ways to best use his talent?
I think it's, you know, I don't think anyone would have predicted a Gary plus bench unit would have been the solution to unlocking, you know, the Raptors, you know, bench struggles, so to speak. But, you know, it's worked, so keep doing it. I think Gary Trent Jr. has been a great story this year. I mean, if you take away, I think he had a 9-game stretch that roughly corresponded when Siakam got hurt, where, you know, he struggled badly. Like, he really, you know, he shot like 28-29%, you know, for nearly a month, 3 weeks, let's say. And it was, you know, that's when kind of, you know, when you're shooting that badly, playing that poorly offensively, everything else gets questioned too. And it wasn't a great little stretch for him. But, you know, you take that stretch out and what he's done since then, coming off the bench, starting, you know, he had a really good start to the season as well. He's been outstanding. And I think, you know, I don't think there's much need to showcase him. Like, I think the league really understands Gary Trent, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's a guy who really excels in some elements of the game, is, I think, overall probably grades out competently defensively. Like, he's got some pluses in terms of his ability to disrupt and get his hand, deflect and steal and that kind of stuff. You know, he gets lost off the ball a little bit. But, I mean, I think he's probably, as I said, he's probably kind of grades out overall neutral. And so he's going to have a market in the offseason. And there's good reason why his name is sort of in the trade market or trade rumor, you know, because his contract is up, and or he'll definitely, he'll be a free agent. I think he'll decline that option for sure. But I don't think it's a lock that he gets traded by any stretch. Mm. You know, I know the Raptors really like him. And I think you run into a question of, you know, there's two questions. One is, if you're trying to be competitive this year, which the Raptors seem to be, you know, it still seems to be the plan, it'd be very hard to trade Gary Trent and improve your team, I think. And you're probably weakening your team in an area that's very weak anyway, and that's perimeter shooting. And then it becomes, in the off season, if he does, so if you don't trade him, you know, and he leaves without compensation, then you've really hurt yourself. And I don't think the Raptors are, you know, they know that. So I think it could be, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he's not traded, and if he does end up back here, because I think they do like value him pretty highly. I think they like him as a player and as a person. But you know, I think the league, you know, you look what he can offer a team, you know, I think it's going to have to be a good deal to get him to move.
Interesting. Last one for you here, Grange. Precious Achiuwa seems like he's finally got up to speed, at least from a conditioning standpoint, returned from that injury. It's kind of derailed his season, frankly. We were expecting him to at least take some steps forward, some progression in his game, but it still seems like there's time to do that. What do you expect from the second half from Precious? And if he can become a player that's relied on more and more for this Raptors team this season and in the future?
They did certainly hope so, and they kind of need him to. You know, I think the biggest development, I'd say, the last two, three games, or last night anyway, is just his fitness, right? Like, he's playing 9-minute stretches. He's able to be on the floor and play with the energy he needs to play with for longer periods. I mean, you know, as you would know, both of you guys would know, you know, if you have an ankle injury, a foot injury, a knee injury, like, your fitness is, it's just so hard to not get back to get back to even in terms of your fitness, let alone the injury. So I think that's kind of coming around now, and he's a huge swing piece for them, because if he can become, you know, a player they project he can based on his talent, then, you know, it makes him a lot better in the present. But it also kind of opens up some possibilities in terms of, you know, which players are signing and, you know, maybe moving on or off from. If he can become, you know, take a big leap, like I think they were hoping to going into this year. So he had a great second half last year, and I think the expectation is he matches or exceeds that. And that's a lot to ask, because he was pretty good the second half of last year. But I think he's shown some signs the last couple of games. And, I think the swing skill for him is, can he be competent to good as, a spacer on offense, you know, being able to step out to the three or those above the break threes, because he's so athletic and so fast that if he's got that in his arsenal, then it really puts the defense under a ton of pressure.
First three-game win streak of the season, a platform for Precious AL to build on. We'll see if that, in fact, happens. Grange, this was fun. Thanks for coming on with us this morning.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
It's Michael Grange, Sportsnet NBA columnist and insider, and suggesting that Gary Trent Jr., not a lock to leave. We'll see how that develops, and we'll see if anyone's going out the door in what seems like a bit of a lost season for the Raptors.
We got to take a break because we got Gunner on the other side, Coastal Leafs Nation. Let's break down a disappointing game for Toronto Maple Leafs with their dads in attendance.
Was his car ride like home?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.